Welcome to the Traveling Enneagram with Nikki Myers. Over the next hour, Nikki and her guests will take you on a journey of self-discovery and teach you all about your Enneagram type, from your core fears and desires to the motivation for your behavior and beyond. Now, here is your host, Nikki Myers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Traveling Enneagram. I am your host, Nikki Myers. And to those of you who are listening live, happy Friday, Junior. That's my favorite thing to say, Friday and Junior, because it's Thursday, but whatever. Any of you who are listening later, I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. We have an absolutely awesome episode today, which I'll get into in just a second, but a couple of housekeeping things. Like I mentioned last week, and as many of you know, June is Pride Month. Ever since I was a little kid, I think I was 14 years old, when I first joined my very first Pride group, and I learned that allyship is something that is very, very important to me. So just a reminder, anybody who books workshops during the month of June, they do not have to happen in the month of June, but anybody who books during June, I will take a portion of the fee and donate it to the Trevor Project. For those of you who don't know what the Trevor Project is, it is a phenomenal organization dedicated to helping LGBTQIA plus youth in some of the darkest times in their life in suicide prevention. And this happens to be really close to me, one, as an ally, two, because of my own personal experience with losing someone very close to me because of death by suicide, but also the work that I do and anybody who's in this space really works hard to help people see the beauty of who they are, the self-worth that we are all allowed to have, and that we have a right to be loved and feel safe and secure. And that is exactly what the Trevor Project seeks to do. So I know the next question you're asking is, Nikki, how do I do that? Well, thank you so very much. Just head on over to Pura Vida, that is PuraVidaCD.com. You can set up 30 minutes to talk with me. We'll figure out what the best agenda for your workshop might be, or if you want to do one-on-one or couple sessions. By the way, those have always been and always will be pay what you can. I can't make any promises how much coffee I will have that time, but we will have a lot of fun and talk about some really great stuff. So head on over and book some time with me. Also, for those of you who I know are anxiously awaiting an update on my hot tub, it's all fixed. It was not once, not twice, but thrice with my Flex Seal tape that I finally got the hole patched and life is back to normal. And I now have a trepidatious relationship with Flex Seal tape at best. So, but it's all good. So with that being said, we are on to the show. I have a really incredible guest with me and a beautiful type two. Anna Everhart is joining me today, and she is a dear, dear friend of mine since elementary school. So we go way back, did the normal middle school hijinks and spent a lot of time talking about the strife in our young adolescent relationships. Of course, as you know, time goes on, we kind of went our separate ways, lived in different areas of the United States. But in 2018-ish, could be wrong, but somewhere around there, Anna moved back to Minnesota, which, by the way, we have a fun little dad joke here. So Anna, what state has the smallest soft drinks?
Oh no. Smallest soft drinks. I don't know.
Minnesota.
Oh, like I should have known that.
I can't help myself. It's a curse.
The stress of being on air.
So Anna moved back to Minnesota. We reconnected, and over, you know, many glasses of wine and just deep late night chats, we talked a lot about the Enneagram. Anna is a certified Enneagram practitioner, and like myself. And it was really those moments that I realized that that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. So Anna, I had a lot of influences in the Enneagram world, and you are certainly one of them. So on to you. So Anna is also a mom of three children, ages 8, 12, and 14. And she has been, one of my favorite words, a mompreneur for 15 years, learning the art of weaving motherhood and following her dreams into a life she's proud of. And for her, what began as a private piano practice and voice studio evolved into founding a performing arts preschool where she taught music and movement classes for children and parents when her own babies were little. One of my favorites, she's also the author of the children's book, Bearful Bear and His New Moves, which encourages kids to move and flow, have fun and experience joy. And just as a side note, Anna, listening to how you speak to kids is such a joy. You are so patient and sweet. And the only thing I can think of in my own personal life is that's how I talk to my dogs.
You do.
So, as I mentioned, Anna is a certified practitioner of the Enneagram. She also founded the Special Needs Mommy Sanctuary. This is a space to help exhausted mothers of special needs children let go of their fears, develop a simple self-care practice, and get clear on their parenting strategies so they can be the fun, present mom they long to be. She uses her experience as a voice teacher to help moms activate and strengthen their voice so that they feel clear and confident with their path, blending soul purpose and motherhood with ease. Anna spent so many years trying to find solutions for herself when nothing worked and getting trapped in the cycle of complaining and wondering why. And now she wants to provide a community that is positive and focused on solutions, healing, and acceptance. How beautiful that is. Anna, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nikki. Thanks for having me. I am so thrilled to be here.
Me too. Me too. This is going to be a lot of fun. So last week, and like I mentioned, we were a little bit out of order, but rules were meant to be broken. So we had our lovely type four. We're going back in time here. We're back on the Enneagram circle. And we are going to be talking about the type two and the giver and helper in our lives. And so with that, we're going to kick it off with a couple of famous type twos and then go into our what it's like to be a two-ism. So famous type twos that many of us know and love. We have Dolly Parton, Desmond Tutu, Mother Teresa, John Denver, Princess Diana, and Richard Simmons. Now, though she's not famous, my mom also happens to be a type two. I hope she's on. So hi, Mom, if you are. But my mom has a really dangerous relationship with technology. Once upon a time, I sent her a very simple text message asking if Kathy Bates was on The Abyss. We had no text exchanges. We were talking on the phone until 2 years later when she responded to me that Kathy Bates was the unsinkable Molly Brown in the Titanic. So, Mom, if you're there, hi.
Oh, hi, Mom. I love that I know her.
Miss Marion. Yep. Yep. All right, Anna, I am going to read to you a couple of what it's like to be a two-isms from the book, The Road Back to You. And I just want you to think about each of them. I'll ask you what your thoughts are. And for anybody who is a type two, think about these if they resonate with you as well. Or if you love a two, know a two, or work with one, or all of the above. So here we go. When it comes to taking care of others, I don't know how or when to say no. I am anxious to overcome misunderstandings in a relationship. Even people I don't know well share deep stuff about their lives with me. It seems like people who love me should already know what I need. I want other people to think I love everyone, even though sometimes I don't. I like it when the people who love me do something unexpected for me. When I'm tired, I often feel like people take me for granted. People say my emotions can feel over the top. I feel angry and conflicted when my needs conflict with others. And finally, I worry a lot about being forgiven when I make mistakes.
Mm. Yes, I believe they all resonate. And some more than others. Some really jumped out at me, but they all resonate for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to dive into why, but one of my favorite things about having you here with me is I know we spend so much time talking. I laughed when I was highlighting the ones I was going to read. So we have to obviously start at the beginning and talk about how this all started. So for those of you who are listening and are type two, grab a box of Kleenex, light a scented candle, and do some deep breathing before we jump in. It's going to be okay. All right. So really important, as we talk about what the childhood message is or how the type two came to be. And I try to mention this every time because it's really, really important. So the way that we like our personality structure is developed comes from a lot of things. And this happens from the minute we're born. Our personality sort of develops until we grow into our sense of self around age 4 or 5. And there's a lot of things that we learn about ourselves that we learn that we need. But so much of this happens either when we're nonverbal, and it's also happening under the hood in our subconscious. And so when we talk about the things that each of these different personality structures like didn't feel like they got enough of, didn't have access to, or really just felt like they needed above everything, or didn't connect with certain people, oftentimes it has nothing to do with how a parent is a parent. We know no parent is perfect, but some people can say they had a really wonderful childhood and still have this need or something that, again, that they didn't feel like they had enough of. Now, can it be a failure on behalf of parents? Of course, we have children who are traumatized, neglected, abused, all sorts of things. But like I try to use the analogy, to me, $5 million is a lot of money. To somebody else, $5 million is not a lot. They don't feel safe or secure unless they have more. And so as we talk about this, it's just important to keep in mind this doesn't have to do with that. And it just comes from what we feel like we need and didn't get enough of. So with that being said, when we look at the type 2 personality structure, these individuals, as children, and again, from the moment of birth and beyond, had this sense that they really didn't get their needs met, oftentimes coming a lot from like love and nurturance. And this ends up being that this individual subconsciously takes on this idea that something is wrong with having needs. If they weren't met, then there's something wrong with having them. And so they tend to go unconscious to them. The type 2 personality structure also talks about feelings that love isn't freely given and that they have to give it in order to get it. What this ends up forming within the type 2 is this need to take care of other people and lavish love and affection and attention onto other people as a sort of indirect way of taking care of them, or hoping or expecting that someone else will take care of this type 2's needs. This is where the name giver and helper comes to play, right? They give, they help, they do whatever they can freely so that they receive love back in the way that they need it. And oftentimes they don't get it the way in which they feel that they need it, but nevertheless, the cycle goes on. This individual is very charming and kind of becomes conditioned to believe that by sacrificing themselves, they will be rewarded with the love that they need. And so the childhood message is that it's not okay to have your own needs. This is what then becomes the core of the type 2 personality structure. And as this type 2 grows into adulthood, this core is their deepest fear that they aren't worthy of love, that they won't receive the love that they need. And it also sets up the relationships that the type 2 has with other people and the expectations and roles that they play as adults. So, Anna, what are your thoughts? How does that sound to you?
I have so many thoughts.
All the thoughts.
Right. Yeah. I think what really stands out is this fact that we're all trying to get essentially the same needs met, but we develop these different strategies when we're younger in order to do that. So my strategy for feeling love, significance, safety is through pleasing other people, helping other people, putting other people's needs first, so that, because what I'm really looking for is to be loved and wanted.
Right.
And so in order to do that, that's kind of how, through my lens, how I learned, or the strategy I use to receive love and to feel wanted. And, you know, everyone has, all the numbers have that need, but yeah. Of course, like, and we've gone through many of the numbers so far in the Traveling Enneagram, but based on your personality structure, that might not be as important to you as it is to a heart type. Because yes. This is, oh wait, no, we've done 3 and 4. So this is actually the last number of the heart type that we're exploring here. So yeah, the heart type is all about love and identity and being valued for that, and how we make that happen in our hearts
yeah.
and in our relationships.
Yeah. And that brings up a really good point and note, as you know, any of you who have been listening, the entire purpose, you know, for me in explaining each of these types is so that if we are that type, we understand ourselves a little bit deeper. It's tough to do in an hour, but we have kind of an idea of what that looks like, and we can give ourselves compassion, right? That's really important, and not judge ourselves and sort of remove shame from some things that maybe we were feeling. But it's also important for people who have a two in their life, in this case, or work with someone, to really understand, first of all, there's no good or bad type. Every type has this really deep resonating need. So if you have this deep resonating need, but it's not this need to be needed as it is for the type two, at least you can say, well, when I know what mine is and how deep that goes into myself, then wow, that must be something deep for them. And I can lend that same compassion and empathy for someone I know who is this particular type, right? And that's what this whole thing is about, is awareness and understanding and compassion and growth.
Yeah.
So then with that being said, we have talked a little bit about the different intelligence centers. So the type two comes from the feeling center or the heart center. And the only, there's a lot of important things to take from this, but what we'll talk about today, and you kind of mentioned, Anna, is that the type two, type three, and type four come from the heart or the feeling center. These individuals are all in some capacity image conscious folks of the Enneagram. We covered off on the 8, 9, and 1. Those individuals come from the instinct or the body center, and then we'll get into the 5, 6, and 7, who come from the head. The 2, 3, and 4 are these image conscious folks who really, in a different capacity for each type, believe that they can't be loved for who they are. And so in this space, they tend to project this false image that they believe will win other people over. And so everything is done in service of that. And it all comes from this heart space. The aversive emotion that we've talked about for the type three and the type four, often also called the protective emotion, is shame. So we've covered off on that stuff. But what I really want to talk about, Anna, is in the first question, I guess, so to speak. So in the Enneagram world, we learn about vices and virtues, right? And the way to think about that, the vice is your liability. The virtue is your superpower, right? And we know when we do our superpowers too hard, they get in our way and they trip us up and they become our blind spot. With the type two, the term pride is used, and it's kind of this desire for an importance, or like attract other people and like engineer relationships. So how does pride show up for you as a type two? And I see you nodding.
Pride, me? Excuse you. I feel like the pride, it's so hilarious because, you guys, this is unconscious. Until you really start working with the Enneagram tool, it's, you read through that initial description and it is brutal and harsh, okay? This is not a fun. I was telling Nikki the other day, like, I don't like the Enneagram. Like, in that day, I was just like, it's too mean. But okay. But you guys, so, but the fact of the matter is it is so enlightening. And so once you really get into the work and you realize, oh my gosh, you know, me helping people and wanting to be an advisor, wanting to be a warm nurturing pillow for people to share their heart, their burden, their frustrations. And I can just say, I see you and I love you and I have this really amazing insight that you need. Okay. So I have I have the answer. Mm-hmm. And what I find is I like doing personal development almost so that I have all the answers, right?
Like, yes.
And I never saw that as pride. I never saw that, you know, it was so unconscious because mm-hmm. I was just thinking I was being a good friend. And so I almost feel, Nikki, like maybe you had mentioned a year or two ago, twos are hard to coach because we're all trained, like, you should be a nice person. You should be caring. You should be generous because a lot of people do need that. The twos, don't need to hear that because they're already they're so wrapped in the grip of that. That, but it, when, you know, we hear that at church or we hear that at school, kindness, yeah. You know, we're like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm trying even harder now. And so we don't see that as pride. And then when I really woke up to that and noticed, wow, that is pride. That is me thinking, I know what's best for you. Mm-hmm. I know what you need. Let me inspire you. And of course, you know, as a two, it's magical, right? It's like, let me inspire you with the latest quote I read, you know, it's like wrapped in this pretty sparkly two bow, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let me just frolic for you and help you to see how beautiful life is and how great you are. And it is beautiful and it is lovely, yeah. But it's been a huge work in progress for me to say, okay, when I am not seeing you as 100% capable to be you and you have the answers inside of you and you know what's best for you, I get to witness you. I get to see you and encourage you that you are already who you need and want to be, then all of a sudden I get to take, that's humility, right? Or just being in the essence of the beauty of the love and the caring and the nurturing, but from a place of seeing my fullness and yours.
Yeah.
There is no deficit within us. I mean, and of course, different faith backgrounds and things, you might see that differently, but just if you can take it as a psychological component of wholeness and leave aside some, you know, some of maybe some different faith backgrounds and how they might view that, is just that when that for me has been really helpful to say, like, I am full and whole and so are you. And I get to witness this moment. And then that relieves me of needing to perform or perfect or enlighten or inspire or somehow fix it so that we can connect. Because in the end, the two wants to connect with you. They want to have intimacy with you. They want to feel close because what we are longing for is to be loved and wanted.
Yeah.
And when we're in the grip of our personality, when we think we need to help you to help some deficiency you have because we're so amazing, that's when we're settling. We're settling for being needed.
Yeah. And I think you brought up a good point too. Like, who looks at being helpful and being kind to other people and, you know, guiding them along their journey, nurturing, who looks at that and says that that's a bad thing, right? Most people are like, that's a good thing. Like you said, kindness is a good thing. What this really boils down to, yes, it is a good thing. But learning about yourself in this capacity doesn't change who you are. We can't change who we are. What it does is it allows us to see the reason why, right?
Exactly.
And for the type two, the reason why is because that giving that love, I don't want to say inauthentically, because I do believe it's authentic, but giving that love is giving love in order to receive it, to fill up your tank. Right. And,
yes.
And when you realize, and part of this work is, and I love in the Enneagram Prison Project work that I'm working on, we spend so much time talking about we are right and beautiful and whole as we are. We don't need to manufacture this stuff in order to get away from something or to receive something or to feel secure, connected. So when we understand that, we can be who we are. We can still be that nurturing, loving, guiding person, but without like an expectation behind it, which, by the way, that's all really subconscious. We don't do that intentionally. So when we kind of see our behavior, our personality in motion, then we can like stop ourselves. And I will tell you this, when I'm having a bad day, the first person I will send a text message to or call most of the time is my husband, but always is Anna. And that's because she does provide that and gives me that. So I want to move
that.
In. Well, it's true. So let's talk a little bit about then some common stereotypes of the type two and what other people see.
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Sorry. I didn't.
Waiting for you to like have a list. Okay. So yeah, I feel like common stereotypes are maybe a little possessive. It could be like inserting yourself into other people's experiences to help them. It could be being it could be childlike maybe in some capacities, or very intensity might be something that people experience. I would say maybe there's a streak of competitiveness that might be a stereotype. And these actually, I don't know, maybe they're not as stereotypical, but I feel like the sense of being basically helping and giving and not putting my needs second. And what I mean by a stereotype with that is that people think that it's somehow me saying, I really want to do X, Y, Z, but because you want to do that, I'm going to sacrifice myself to do this for you. When really, I think it's a lot more subconscious than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like when I think of some of the stereotypes of the type two, what comes to my mind the most is being a pushover,
doormat.
Yeah. And like being, overly emotional. I think the connection, and I said this with my type four guest, at least for me, being really far removed from my emotions, I think when anybody has a connection to their emotions, it's a really beautiful thing. And to me, you know, do type twos generally tend to be pretty emotional? Yes. But we also have to think about, again, where that comes from, right? It's when this individual is not in a space to help people or to take care of them, or they feel like they're being criticized, that's zinging at this connection that is so important. And so those emotions or those feelings are really like how this type can express themselves. That's not like, again, that's not a bad thing at all. And the two in periods of, however you want to look at it, there's a lot of ways that we describe the levels of health, but a movement to eight, right? And the eight is the challenger and the asserter. This type two has the ability to really lean in and borrow that strength from the eight. So they aren't pushovers, right? And so that's kind of what comes to mind for me. But again, this whole thing is about seeing the space for compassion, right? And seeing that beauty. So
I think I've done so much work going beyond the stereotypes that it's almost hard for me to think of stereotypes. Now I was like, oh, sure. Wait, let me think, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just being sensitive to rejection is huge.
I agree.
And maybe we can get to that.
Yes, we are. And with that, 30 minutes have flown by in the blink of an eye. And so we are going to take a quick break and we won't see you all soon. We'll talk to you all soon. Until then.
I have a coffee.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Ever wanted to know what makes you, you? Why you think and feel the way you do? And more important, what the motivation for your behavior is? And when you know this about yourself, what do you do with all of it anyhow? Learning about your Enneagram type helps answer these questions and so much more. Listen to The Traveling Enneagram with host Nikki Myers for answers to these questions. Thursdays at 12 p.m. on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Where can you listen to some of the world's top life coaches ready to dish out success tips and entrepreneurial guidance? The Voice America Empowerment Channel will do just that. Whether it's personal growth, building a better business, or inspirational life stories, make it a daily habit to tune into our programs. From weight loss and personal branding to law of attraction and increased happiness, you'll find it every day at voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You're listening to the Traveling Enneagram with Nikki Myers. Got a question about the Enneagram, your type, or that hashtag camper life? Nikki and her guests want to hear from you. Join us on the show at 888-346-9141 for questions around the campfire. That's 888-346-9141. Now back to the show. Here's Nikki.
Welcome back, everybody. So right before the break, Anna, you had mentioned the word rejection, and that's actually what I wanted to move into next. So thinking about the type two personality structure, tell me a little bit about what the word rejection means to you, and maybe a little bit of what criticism looks like.
Oh, I shudder, Nikki. I was kidding. I mean, rejection is a really tricky space, a hurtful space, a common feeling, I would say, for a two and really anyone in the heart triad. Rejection's definitely something we feel pretty deeply. And I know for a two, feeling included socially, whether it is in a one-on-one relationship or just how much something like a staff meeting, how much energy. Okay. Like I remember at my job, they cut me out of all but one staff meeting a month. And I felt hurt. Like I'm cut off from the social circle. And it like, even something like that feels like a rejection. And I know that that's silly. I know, like in my mind, I know it doesn't make sense. You know, they want to make better use of our time, but I'm like, do they not know that like this staff meeting gives me energy for all the things I don't like to do? So I think that feeling of rejection, or just if I think I let someone down, if I think I hurt someone, one of the things I notice in my closer relationships is that if I've hurt them, the newer insight I have is I can tend to want to respond with, oh my gosh, like I did, but I didn't mean to do that, and kind of justify this is what happened. And this is, you know, and it's been hard for me to just listen and take that in and say, wow, you were hurt. Mm-hmm. And so it's that feeling of rejection, or I did something wrong. So it's the shame and the rejection really kind of, you know, flow in a situation like that. And part of like the growth of the Enneagram is saying, I can just be and listen to them. Again, it's the same with not inserting help. I can also listen and know that I may have impacted someone negatively, even though I think they probably would know it would never be intentional that I would hurt them. That's something that's really important to me. So the rejection can feel really strong, and it takes a lot of kind of readjusting and reframing my self-talk to know, to really bring in, you know, the head type almost that I don't really possess, to say, I know that this isn't true and this feels this way.
Yeah.
But I know my value. But it hurts. And when I feel cut off from people, if I haven't had a chance to just connect, I can start to think, are they avoiding me, or did I do something? I think a two stereotype that we missed is, are you mad at me? I think twos say that a lot. Are you mad at me? Did I do? Because if you haven't, like if I've emailed you and you haven't responded for like longer than I feel comfortable with or something, like, did I do something wrong? Did I hurt you? Are you upset? And so, it's that feeling of rejection. And I have to remind myself again, now that I'm done this inner work, like they're busy, you know, just because I sent it and I knew it was important to me, they may not have, you know, realized that it's important to me. And so it's like my favorite new quote is, here I go. I'm like, let me inspire you and wow you with this great quote. but it's the biggest mistake about communication is the illusion that it's taken place. And I think for a two to really, you know, your needs, like I actually literally have a universal needs list. I just showed Nikki, but you guys just heard the crinkling paper, but, that I'm really like stewing over, and what do I need and want? And that's part of the work for the two is, what What do I want? I don't know. And to say, maybe sometimes me just leaning into what other people want, reading the room, knowing what people are feeling, that just is my superpower, my strength, mm-hmm. but really being able to recognize my needs, recognize my desires, and being able to communicate it in a way that, that's helpful. Cause we haven't really gotten into the level of health, but just the two does go to eight in stress. And so, you know, what I've told Nikki is I won't know what I need until I've had a meltdown.
I've been present to that.
She mm-hmm. knows me and she still loves me anyway. Thank you, Nikki. So just the fact that the eight, okay, wherever we go in stress, that's designed kind of intrinsically mm-hmm. to support us, to be that rumble strip on the side of the road, to keep us from going too far off the edge where we're not safe, we're not behaving in a way that's going to be acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so to see that as support. So, but that eight, so maybe I have a meltdown. And then after the fact, I'm like, oh, why didn't I see that I just needed to ask for help? Okay. Oh, yeah. That's part of the pride, right? I don't ask for help. I don't need help. Yep. People need my help, but I don't need their help. That's the pride. But again, this is totally unconscious. I didn't even register that. That wasn't a choice when I was in the grip of my personality structure. But then once you go through the levels of health and you're really growing through your type, part of this needs and the communication is saying, hey, I could really use some help with this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of that missing piece of eight where you really can go, you know, four, I'm kind of learning what I want, what I don't want, what are my needs,
right.
Growing into that place of health. And then that's when I can access that healthy eight and say, hey, I can communicate my needs. I can bring my presence, my hopes and dreams into this moment with you or with myself even, which is really healthy. Solitude for a two is great to help with the needs and the desires and just quieting your mind. And so I have found that to be a very consistent theme. And now caveat, okay, let's say I am like, I've reached, you know, my brilliance and I'm, and I am going to ask for this need to be met. And like, wow, I have arrived. I'm really, you know, all yep. I'm growing in my type and I'm saying, hey, I could really need this. If someone says no.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh goodness.
Then I get a phone call.
Uh-huh. That's when Anna's going to write a resignation letter, you know? Yeah. Like, then it's like, oh, I've reached the top of the mountain. And then it's like a stumble off the cliff back to the lower levels of health of the two where I feel rejected. This is why I don't ask for help. This is why I'm all on my own. This is why I don't want to put myself out there. This is why. And then that's kind of what that, to me, the fourth security point feels like. And I don't mm-hmm. know, Nikki, how much we get not into all much. Those little, but just say sometimes the four is my healthy place. And sometimes it can be like, you know, fours tend to withdraw.
Right.
So if I put myself out there in kind of a healthy eight and then things don't go right, I don't hear back, I don't get the help, then I can kind of go into this withdrawn space and do some isolating in not the most healthy way.
Yeah.
It's not the glorious solitude of Vipassana meditation. Now it's like, nobody likes me. And that's when you're going to find me at the piano playing really sad songs and trying to express myself. Yeah. Okay. That's classic.
That's classic.
Sad Anna.
That's classic sad. I love this so much.
It is classic sad Anna.
So kind of as part of that, not necessarily in the same vein, but I also want to talk about the term people pleaser and what it means to do that. And the connection with that to getting your needs met, sort of thinking about like what strategic helping looks like.
Yes. So I feel like for me, the way I know I'm a two is that pleasing is automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And it is strategic. And that kind of brings us full circle to the beginning. It's like, we all have a strategy to get our needs met. And so my strategy is pleasing, because if I please you, then you will want me and you will need me. And that's really my core longing is, well, my core desire is to be loved and wanted. Of course, the two really just wants to be loved for who they are.
Right.
But they might not know who that is.
Right. Right.
So the strategic pleasing is, well, if I can do this for you, then you will love me and want me around.
Yeah.
And there's fear around, if I'm not going to please you, will you turn your back on me and abandon me? Will you resent me? Will you withhold love from me if I don't please you? And when that does happen in my life, it's pretty triggering, because it's kind of that self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
So when you're look, I'm not worthy of love. And if I'm just me, see, then there's nothing and you don't love me. If I try to meet my own needs, you left me.
Yeah.
And now I'm alone. And what I really wanted was to be loved just for who I am. And now you're gone. And see, that's why I can't do that. That's why I can't have needs.
Oh, Anna.
This is legit.
I know it is. I have to kind of giggle a little bit, because I enjoy B. Chestnut's narrative tradition panel interviews. Oh, and
I love it.
I watch them, you know, to kind of just get in, settle into the moment with this. And I was watching the type 2, all of them at one point cried.
I was really close just then.
I want to move into, and I know that was kind of quick for that last one, but you know, we spend a lot of time talking about what, at least during the show, again, because it's a compassion point. So I want to take some time to talk about what the beauty of the type 2 is. And it's, you know, in this capacity, it is obviously something we all want and need and love feeling, but how has your type served you? And what is the beauty of the type 2?
I love this question. I love being a type 2. I love making people feel welcome. Now I'm going to cry. You know, when I see a middle school kid or a high school kid or a little, you know, and they're feeling left out and they're feeling upset, and I see them and I can go and talk with them. And I know there was, you know, where I was even last night, you know, this boy was out with our group at this, you know, event, and he didn't want to be there and he wanted to be inside with his iPad. He had to be out with these kids at the playground. And I was like, you're going to hang out with me and we're going to talk. And we talked about Tesla cars. I was like, I was just thinking that we need to put solar panels on top of cars and like figure that out. You know, I don't know. I will meet you where you're at.
Yeah.
I will know how to have conversation with you intrinsically. And I want to make life fun for you. I want you, you know, we all want to give what we want. You know, it's like, you want to give what you want the most, right?
Yeah.
You can be exactly who you are, and I will love you, and I will lavish you with whatever it is that you need. You know, I love the type 2 song by Sleeping at Last, you know, a tidal wave will make a mess, or calm waters if that serves you best. Aww. And that is, you know, I will love you with, you know, no strings attached, which now that might not be true, but you don't know. I'm kidding. But that, I love that. I mean, that is so beautiful to me.
Yeah.
And, if I could be that for the people around me in my life, if I could make them smile and make them feel free to be themselves and like they're worth an infinite amount, then that makes me super happy.
Well, let me tell you, over the last few, what is it now? Like 4 years since we've kind of gotten back in our friendship space. And I feel that way. And I love, like, I know every time I talk to you, I'm going to smile. I'm going to feel good. I'm going to feel loved. And I'm not kidding when I say, and for a lot of people who have a two in their life, it is not a thing to just want to call or talk to that person, because it's such a nurturing, loving energy that is inclusive and safe. And I know I can be myself around you and you will love me no matter what. And so I think everybody who is a two, you should celebrate that. Everybody who knows a two, you should also celebrate that.
Thank you. That's lovely.
Of course. We've got two questions here.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yes. So let's see, we've got about 6 minutes to talk through these. So we have, my partner is a type two. She is really, really sensitive to criticism. Mm. I find it hard to give her feedback without her getting really emotional. This is hard for me because I then feel like I'm not able to express my needs, so I don't upset her. And that is from Ginny in Texas.
Ginny, yeah, you are right. And I have had that feedback from partners as well. So what I have tried to do as a two to really get better at this, and this is something that you can practice no matter what your type is, that might allow them to be able to hear the criticism or just the feedback. Mm-hmm. One, I would just say they might be upset and it might be hard, but you still tell them because that's the number one. Now, how you tell them can, you know, be improved upon. So I love the nonviolent communication method. So this event took place and I felt, so I, when you can focus on how you felt, you know, I felt scared. I felt left out. I felt frustrated. I felt smothered, you know, whatever your feeling was. And then you ask for a request. And you can do the appreciation sandwich is always a nice action where, you know, and again, type twos typically really thrive on words of affirmation. So I appreciated this so much about you. This meant so much to me and this hurt or whatever. And, but I want you to know that I love you unconditionally.
Yeah.
You know, and that will help soften the blow. That doesn't mean that they still won't feel rejection.
Right.
And I think that's important to note. They're never not going to feel some level of rejection or shame, just like whatever your type is, you know, you're going to have your natural feeling. And so just become okay with the fact that their feelings might be hurt and know that it won't last.
Right.
And they will want to please you.
And it sounds like kind of the way that I hear that is almost kind of like how would you want it to be brought to you? Like gently and, well, like maybe that's not true for every type, but it's that compassion moment, right? Like now that you know this information too, that could be a simple question. Like, how do you want to hear this feedback? Like what, you know, what is the best way that doesn't send you, you know, like you said, off the mountain, to feeling now that you did everything wrong. Right. And I think words matter. So prefacing a situation by saying, this is not a deal breaker. I just want to share with you how I'm feeling, or, you know, kind of framing it up. Right.
Yeah. And some other things that come to mind is waiting until you're in a safer zone. So maybe don't bring it up right in the heat of the moment. And if they know anything about the Enneagram too, you know, I think that it's okay to lovingly also call out, hey, when this happened, I noticed that it seemed really like, you know, and you don't need to be your partner's therapist either. So I'm not, we all have to take responsibility. That's what I call it, for our stuff. Okay. I know. So to lovingly say, hey, it seemed like, let's say she like criticized you or was resentful, you know, to say like, it seemed like you were really upset earlier. Can you tell me more about that? And maybe give your partner a chance to open up a little bit. And it might give them a chance to say, I'm really sorry because I was overreacting, or, you know, it might open it up. And if it doesn't, at least you've opened that dialogue to hear them first. And whenever someone feels heard, they're going to be more willing and open to hear you.
I love that. We do have just 2 minutes for the next question here. So, but I like this one a lot. It says, this is from Gary. It says, what advice would you give a male who is a type two? I find this to be really difficult because I heard from my earliest years that men don't cry.
Oh, yes. First of all, I see you and really want you to feel like you are perfect just the way you are. And you were designed this way for a purpose and to make the impact that you want. And so just want to love that. And I have several type two guy friends who have felt that way as well. I would take some time in solitude and to lean into what's really important to me, because what might be important to someone else, this is what I love. What is the most vulnerable is typically the most universal.
Mm, yeah.
And there are other men out there and women who feel like they can't cry and, or whatever. And so just maybe lean into what do I want? That's really you coming into the four and the healthy eight too, is who am I? What is important to me? And that will allow you to feel like you're coming from a place of empowerment with your emotions rather than feeling shame for being the way you are.
Yeah.
But that, like, you're just going to automatically, because it's your decision that you're in touch with your emotions, you're going to come from a place of empowerment. So whether you're crying or you're laughing or you're empathing, it's you.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that goes back to, you know, what we were talking about with, like, we are inherently beautiful who we are. And when we can get to a place where we can accept that, then we can also move to a place where we can remove the shame from feeling those things. And I think I am one of those people. I've said it almost every episode. I do find it hard to cry. I find it hard to connect with those more difficult emotions. And so I will tell you, there was a particular class I took where we talked about vulnerability, and I just allowed myself to happen and allowed myself to let it happen. And it felt so good. It felt foreign, but it felt good. And I think the opposite is true, where if you feel that and know that it's coming from that authentic space, to feel it, to let it happen, to own it, and to know that it allows you to be a full, whole, healthy human being. With that, yes, with that, I can't believe that this time has gone by this quickly. So Anna, really quickly, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at the Special Needs Mommy Sanctuary. I also have a Facebook group under the same name. And I have a website that I think is listed in the show. And you can also find me at annaeverhart.com and send me an email, send me your thoughts. I would love to know if anyone's interested in talking about more about the Enneagram too. I would love to share some time with you.
And she's got great things to say, friends. We spend a lot of time on the phone. All right. So next week I have a very, very special treat. We are covering the type five, the investigator. I have Dr. Jerry Wagner joining me. He is an incredibly intelligent human being with a founding presence in the Enneagram world. And I am beyond honored to have him on the show. And Anna, I am honored to have had you on the show too. So thank you. With that, EnneaFam, remember, be present, stay curious, and adventure often. That's it. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Traveling Enneagram today. Did you discover who you are? Do you still have questions? Then join us on the show next week and continue your journey of self-discovery. Until we talk again, have a great week.